This program is part of the Infinite Potato Alliance. Visit us at infinitepotato.com.
Isn't it about time for somebody's favorite radio program?
Attention, whoever you are, this channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Hold on to your butt.
And here we go.
From the historic Infinite Potato Studios, this is Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Join us as we dive deep into all fandoms and genres of cinema and television.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
No gatekeeping.
You shall not pass!
No toxic fandom.
A monkeys might fly out of my butt.
Now, only inches from a tall glass of Diet Mountain Dew.
Just give me something without any sugar in it, okay?
Here is your host, Sean Ray.
Sean. Shawnee, if you're feeling a little loose. Never the Sean dog, because that's just lame. And I've never been one to chase balls.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
All right, it was a miracle. Can we go now?
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast. My name is Sean Ray, and I realize that chopsticks are both a thing and the action that you take to make the thing. Joining me tonight in the historic Infinite Potato Studio, we have Jen. How are you?
I have no reaction to that. I just, okay. Hi.
Virginia is joining us as well. How are you doing, ma'am?
Also, no reaction to that. Hello.
You have to chop sticks to make chopsticks.
I got it. I wish I didn't, but Rick, I got it.
Rick is joining us. How's it going, sir?
That is the only thing I can play on the piano. So there you go.
Chopsticks. On the big piano that you stand on?
On any piano.
And we have Scott. How are you, sir?
I once got complimented in a Chinese restaurant by the manager on my chopstick skills and technique. I didn't know what to
fly.
Is it good or bad that I've heard that story before? And John is with us as well. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. I respect the joke. 5 out of 5.
All right. So I thought I'd start out with a little bit of, oh, Scott, you can come back. I'm sorry. I thought I'd start out with a little bit of what we've been watching. I went to a drive-in theater this week and saw the premiere of Eternals. And I'm going to review it, and I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah, just give me a thumbs up when you're done. I'm taking my headphones.
I'm not going to spoil it. I promise. I've written down what I'm going to say. I believe your sincerity,
but I don't want to know anything. Like, I barely know who's in it. Just give me a thumbs up when you're done.
Okay. All right. So I went in thinking that this movie was going to be just okay because, you know, I heard the buzz that it wasn't great, but Marvel rarely lets me down. So I figured it would be entertaining enough. And I really enjoyed it. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I'll just say that it's a very good movie. It's not an Avengers movie. So be prepared that it's not at that level. But there are some breathtaking visuals in this movie, and there are some really good performances. It's a lot of fun and kind of a standalone movie. So if you've never seen a Marvel movie before, you can watch this one and you won't be lost. You know, you don't have to know all the nooks and crannies of the MCU to enjoy it. So it's its own thing.
Do you have to know anything about any of the characters in it? Because I had no idea about any of them.
I didn't. Okay. I never read an Eternals. I never even heard of them until I saw the trailer for this. So,
yeah, same here.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a recommend. I gave it 3.5 stars out of 5 on my personal rating system or whatever. So it's It's good. I liked it. I would recommend it. There, you know, there's some slow parts to it. It's 2.5 hours long. And I mean, it does kind of slow down in places, but there are some really good action sequences and they're kind of scattered throughout. So it's not like all action in the beginning, then slow in the middle, then action at the end. They, you know, it's kind of interspersed in there. So
would you say it's child friendly? Because Sharon asked me if totally out of the blue, is the Eternals okay for kids? And I said, I have absolutely no idea. Why do you ask? And she said, because I got an Eternals toy in my Happy Meal. And I'm like, well, that doesn't always mean anything.
I mean, not any less child friendly than like Infinity War or something along those lines. There is a sex scene, but it's not graphic. They don't show anything, but there are two characters that have sex in the movie. So other than that, you know, I think it would be fine.
Okay.
All right. John, you can come back now. All right.
Wow, I can't believe how it ended. That's cool.
And then Tony Stark comes back to life in the post-credit scene. Okay.
You're muted.
Also.
Oh, that's too bad. It was perfect. That was a perfect delivery.
What'd you say?
Say the Tony Stark thing again, Sean.
And then Tony Stark comes back to life in the end credit scene.
Fuck you, 3000.
All right.
We could tell what the first two words were. We're sure.
Also, the show Them. Have any of you guys watched that on Amazon Prime?
Nope.
No.
Yes.
I binged the whole thing last weekend. Last Sunday. It's rough.
Not ants.
It's rough. But I mean, it's good. It's a good show. It's fantastic, but it's rough. There's some very hard to watch moments. I almost had to turn it off at one point. Rick, don't watch it.
I was going to say, okay. Is it Rick friendly?
No.
What's it about?
Well, okay. So the premise of the show is that this black family moves into a white middle-class suburban neighborhood in the late 40s or early 50s, somewhere in that in that time. Yeah. Allison Peel is in it. And they're not welcome. They're not welcome at all. And they make it very clear that they're not welcome. But the reason I say don't watch it is the main characters in the first episode, they show that they had a baby. That when they cut to later in the future, the baby's not there anymore, and they show you later on in the series what happened to the baby. And I don't recommend, if you don't like seeing things happen to kids, I wouldn't watch that.
Go ahead, Rick.
I was gonna say, all you know, black family moves into a white neighborhood in the 40s. That's pretty much all I need to know. And after you saying this was a rough show to watch,
because a lot of things, but you know. It was really well written and it was really well acted. And then some supernatural stuff starts to happen as well.
How would it compare to like Watchmen, the Watchmen series that came out last year?
Wouldn't compare it to that. No. Yeah.
It is. I've never seen the Purge series. I imagine it's more on Purge level.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. That bad. Okay.
It is relentless. And here's the thing.
But so, the storytelling is better than a Purge movie. I'm talking
in terms of how graphic the violence is.
Yeah.
So this black family that's already, you know, suffered this traumatic events moves into this white suburban neighborhood. And so the story's kind of told on two levels. Like, yes. So there's all the horrible stuff that happens to them just as black people living with a bunch of racist white people. And there's all the horrible stuff that happens to them on a supernatural way. Mm. And both of these areas are very horrible. And it's the whole series. Like there's a little bit of kind of okay, no spoilers. Well, there's a whole lot of hurt for a little bit of happiness at the end. It does not balance out to me.
Let me ask y'all a question then. because, you know, frequently we have this discussion a lot offline where they'll be like, oh, okay, here, you know, another example is Squid Game. Everybody's raving about Squid Game. Everything I hear about it tells me I don't want to watch it. What? No matter how well a story like this is told or written or performed, why do you want to watch something that's so unremittingly miserable?
Squid Game is not miserable.
Yeah,
I would not say.
I wouldn't call it.
No. Squid Game is just that's a different thing. That's a different thing.
But
if I had it to do over again, I probably wouldn't watch it. You know, it's, I haven't watched, you know, I haven't watched The Joker. I haven't watched Joker because of what I think I'm going to see. I'm sure it's an excellent movie and I'll probably watch it eventually. But I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Rick. It's different if, you know, if it's an alien creature that's coming down and blowing people up with lasers, as opposed to this horrible thing that horrible people actually do to relatively innocent people. I don't really have any desire to see that.
Especially
growing up as a Black man in America, where it's actual history and not, you know, so much theoretical. Like, yeah, I, you know, my wife has much more of a, tolerance for that kind of stuff than I do. Like, I don't, as a friend of mine put it years ago, he doesn't watch war movies because he's like, I don't need to be reminded of man's inhumanity toward man.
Well, it's like when someone is recommending a movie and they're like, oh man, it was so good, I was wrecked by the end, I was just bawling, and I'm like, why? I don't understand the appeal of watching a movie that makes you absolutely, you know, crying your eyes out.
But you tell us all the time you get emotional watching movies all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say it's an emotional journey. It's the same people, same reason people ride roller coasters.
Yeah.
See, so that they can get scared. But then
it's like I watched the show. My wife and I have very few shows that we watch together that we both like. And one of them is This Is Us. And This Is Us is like that, you know.
Oh, that wrecks me, man. I watch it. Ugh.
That's what I keep hearing.
But it's also got a lot of humor in it. Mm-hmm. It's got some excellent acting and very good storytelling and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, some of the storylines are going to make you feel things, but I think it makes you feel things because you're connecting with those characters and you're connecting with that story.
It's not the discomfort. It's not the getting wrecked. It's not the depression or the oppressive sadness that can be brought on by some of these storylines. It's the catharsis of feeling those emotions.
Yep.
It's watching something that pulls the emotional reaction out of you.
Why Atreyu had to go through all those hardships.
Yeah. I never watched that movie.
I tried to watch it. It just bored the
regardless of what
the first 30, 40 minutes is kind of boring.
Right.
Call it a never-ending movie.
Regardless of what emotion is being pulled from you, it's the fact that a film or television series or what have you is pulling that emotion. Just that release of it. I think that's what a lot of people enjoy. Watchmen, I found to be very disturbing at times.
Yeah.
The movie or the show?
The show. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those moments were, this may surprise a lot of you listeners, I'm white. So as a white guy watching...
Where do you live again?
Watching Watchmen and, you know, just... Not to say that it was loading me up with white guilt, but knowing that most of what it was showing in that series, you know, all based in truth. None of it seemed impossible to believe. And that in itself was disturbing enough, mm-hmm. especially in the first episode, seeing the destruction of Black Wall Street. and thinking, huh, they're making this, this must be the point in history where things diverged and it became the alternate history we see in the Watchmen comic book. And then finding out shortly thereafter, no, this is the real part. This is what actually happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of uncomfortable emotions that the show brought to me, you know, being shown my own ignorance, not comfortable at all, but one of the best parts of that series, because it made me feel that. Didn't like feeling it in the moment, but after it happened, again, like I said, that catharsis.
You know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that y'all are wrong for liking this stuff or that it's bad or anything like that. It's just, I frequently have, you know, the discussion of, I saw this movie or, you know, X movie and what I've heard about it, I don't want it. Oh, but it's so good. Yeah. But I've heard this about it. Well, yeah, it is, but it's so good. And then I feel like, and maybe this is, you know, maybe I'm just projecting. I sometimes feel like
we're not listening to you.
Not so much that. I mean, I'm what I was about to say makes it sound a hell of a lot more persecuted than I mean it to sound. But I sometimes feel negated. Maybe the right word, because I don't want to watch stuff like this. Now, if it happens to be in something I'm watching, I'm not going to turn it off. But like, I don't go out of my way to watch shows that are going to make me sad or angry. You know, I've said this before. There are episodes from the BSG Battlestar Galactica reboot that I turned to my wife when it was over. And I said, if this wasn't on a science fiction show, I'd have never watched that. And I don't go back and rewatch them. You know, I can appreciate the acting and all of that stuff. But and I'm not trying to say that y'all want, you know, enjoying this stuff is wrong. I've never been able to understand the active seeking out of misery on the screen.
I, for myself, I agree. I think it's a question of degrees. Like, you know, you don't want to watch something that has no emotional arc. It's got to be something that makes you, you know, like Sean said, connect with the character and feel sad when something bad happens or feel angry or whatever. Like that's the point of storytelling, is to pull you on the journey with them. And if it, I agree. Like I said, my wife has it. Like she's. You know, like our two Netflix cues. Like there is a Venn diagram of, you know, sci-fi and comedy a little bit. But hers is way more depressing. Hers is way more historical dramas and you know, apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic, you know, really heavy, you know, cerebral sci-fi.
Wait, does she have the same cue that I do?
Sounds like it. And mine is much more, you know, action, adventure, superhero type stuff. And like I said, there's some stuff that we watch that fits both. But, you know, she's much more inclined to I wouldn't say seek out the misery. It's like it's just a question of what your threshold is.
Yeah,
mine is lower than hers, and yours, I think, Rick, is lower than mine.
Yeah, you know, like The Offspring from TNG is one of my favorite episodes.
Which one is that?
That's the one with when Data builds LOL.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yeah,
and you know, and yeah, the ending. Every time tears my heart out, but also there's enough silliness in the episode and stuff that it's like, okay, I can breathe, even though I know what's coming. But like when you say this show is just unrelentingly bleak and awful and it's so good, and I'm like, those two terms don't go together for me.
I mean,
and that's cool. I'm trying to understand it, not criticizing.
Yeah, like, I was a huge fan of The Walking Dead for several seasons, and I probably haven't watched like 2-3 seasons ago. The finale was like, you know what? I'm done. I can. And it's not like they hadn't done, like, The Walking Dead never pulled punches. Like, you know, they would do things and kill characters that you thought would, like, you know, and they'd bring in new characters, and sometimes they live and sometimes they die. And that was one of the things that I appreciated about it was, you know, there weren't any bulletproof characters. So you never knew what was going to happen. But like you said, it was a good mix of, they had losses, but they also had victories. And, it got to the point that where they suffered such a loss. I'm done. And I will probably at some point go back and watch, because I think I quit two, three seasons ago.
Was it Carl?
Or Rick?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't either.
Rick didn't die.
No, but he left.
Yeah, he left.
It wasn't. I was with it through that. I was with it through Carl.
Was Carl the dude with the baseball bat?
No.
As far as I know,
Carl still, was the kid.
No, that was Carl. That's Negan, Carl was Rick's
son, the little sheriff. Because it doled out the joy and the pain. until that episode, it was I don't know her name, but the leader of the alpha, I think it's her, right? The one
who, yeah.
So the season finale of the season where Alpha is introduced was that was my limit. I was like, and I know it wasn't the end of the series, and I know there was, you know, still a story to tell, but I'm fine with that being on the shelf for now.
That's how it was with Game of Thrones, you know, genre show. I was totally for it. And at the end of season two, I was like, I just can't take this anymore. There's just no joy.
Season
here.
Two, you bailed early, man.
It got much better.
Oh, I know. Yeah, my wife was still watching it.
It got better and worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about this, and I have a pretty high threshold as far as shows go, but I've been rewatching Peaky Blinders, which I've actually stopped watching it for a while. I can't sit through that. I can only watch like one episode at a time, and I usually like binge a ton of, I can't. It's so bleak and there's so much going on, and it's too much even for me, you know? And that's rare for me to say that. It's hard. Yeah. It's really hard to sit through.
Sorry for derailing the conversation.
No, I
apologize. You love,
if you feel like we are like, if we, you know, are on your case or dismiss your, I want to say sensibilities, because that sounds more judgmental, but you know, but I mean, that's what it is. If we are not hearing what you're saying, and we're like, yeah, we should do it anyway because it's cool. So I apologize if that's the sense, if you feel like this wave is coming from us, but that's not, I think, and I'm sure you know, it's all coming from a place of, I think that you'll enjoy this.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I was trying to choose my words carefully. I don't feel persecuted or shat upon or anything like that, but I don't always think that I make myself clear about why I don't particularly want to watch something that everybody else is digging. And sometimes I feel like it's, oh, well, Rick's not going to want to watch this.
Yeah. To date, I've only gotten Rick into one show that I like. One.
Yeah.
That was Penny Dreadful.
Oh, yeah. And Penny Dreadful is miserable. There's a lot of miserable stuff that happens in that show.
I quit on Penny Dreadful.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, but not necessarily because it was too much for me. I didn't find it that interesting.
I tried to watch it. I lost interest in the first series, and then they came back last year and did another series,
which is completely different.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. And I tried to watch that, and it was even more miserable.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bleak. Let's put it.
See,
that way.
I didn't. This was going to come up because when I tell you what I've been watching, Penny Dreadful was going to be. I started watching one of the shows you recommended, Sean. And I don't know why Penny Dreadful worked for me. Maybe because it was so fantastical. You know, I'll watch a monster movie. I won't watch a slasher movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because a slasher movie is too real. Whereas I can make that disconnect in my head about something, you know, even Jaws really comes close to the line for me. If I didn't know, you know, when it came out, it scared the living crap out of me. I have since learned, you know, one, great whites don't get that big, and two, they don't act like that. So I can disconnect it as this is a monster movie in the shape of a shark.
Yeah.
Do you consider Nightmare on Elm Street monsters or slashers?
I never watched one of them, so I don't know.
So that's the difference, because I look at most slasher movies, I look at them as monster movies because they're not human. Those are not human characters. They can't be stopped. Michael Myers, Jason, they can't be stopped. They're not people. They're like these zombified immortal characters that just keep coming.
But they weren't at the beginning, though. You know, Friday the 13th wasn't even, well, spoiling a 40-year-old movie or however, you know, Friday the 13th was not Jason. It was his mother.
Yeah, and she died. And
she was not a supernatural creature.
Yeah, that's what I loved about it, the first one. So,
You know, eventually those movies became parodies of themselves.
Yeah.
But the originals, you know, I've never seen a Halloween movie, and I never will, because that's not my gig, my thing. But
you need to watch Halloween 3. You would love it.
Do not do that to him.
Don't do that.
Is that the one in space?
No, that's in Friday the 13th.
That's Sean's dickest sense of humor.
Pretty much.
Now, I have been watching, though. Get us back.
I guess
track
we're moving
here.
To Rick for what he's watching.
just because, you know, you, I was like, all right, there's a whole bunch of shit everybody's talking about, and I'm not watching any of it. Tell me what you think I should watch. And one of the things that Sean recommended was a show called Brand New Cherry Flavor.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'd never heard of it. I had no idea what it was about. I watched the first two episodes tonight, and if I hadn't had to stop to do this show, I'd still be watching it.
It's a good show.
It's
you've heard of it because I talked about it. Me and Chris talked about it here on the show a couple of times.
Okay.
Because we kept telling you it's got the girl that played in the Trouble with Edwards short trek. She played the captain. That's the main character.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And her. she was also the well, then that was a while ago that we talked about it, because you know, I barely remember what I say on mic, let alone what anyone else says. Oh, that's right. She was also the mocap for Alita.
Yeah, that's right.
But she's I forget the actress's name, but she's a going out to Hollywood because she made a fairly successful student film, and supernatural hijinks ensue. And I really don't, I'm only two episodes in. So I know what's going on. I don't want to.
I think there's only six or seven episodes. It's not a very long series.
Yeah. And it's based on a novel. Mm-hmm. But it's very Penny Dreadful like, except nothing like Penny Dreadful. You know, it's not gothic horror at all. But it's still, I kind of get that same feel for it. I also get the impression I'm going to have to read the book when I'm done watching this series, because it really feels like it's just kind of skittering over the surface of whatever the book was. I may be wrong about that, but that's what it feels like anyway. But I really enjoyed it.
I haven't read it. Yeah, I enjoyed it too. It's a good show. What about you, Jim? What have you been watching?
I have a big list, so be prepared. Okay, first off, as I've mentioned to Sean, I saw Dune, the new one. Have any of y'all seen it yet?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. We talked.
We did a live stream and talked about it. Okay. And then stopped talking about it, and then came back and talked about it some more.
Okay. Fair enough. So I won't go into that again. I've been trying to watch Peaky. Can't get into it again. Instead, I've been catching up on both Titans and Doom Patrol, since they're now on HBO Max. Yay. Titans just finished season 3. Doom Patrol is just about to finish season 3. Completely different shows, as Scott can tell you. And I'm actually enjoying Doom Patrol more than Titans, for reasons that we've just talked about.
I watched the premiere of Doom Patrol, but I stopped because I decided that this is a show that I need to be able to watch an episode every couple of days. I don't want to wait a week to watch it. So I'm just going to wait until the whole thing's out, and then I'll binge it over a week or so.
Yeah, they just put out they're in the third season. They just put out episode 9 this week, and it's going to go to episode, I think, 12 or 13. The second season is slightly shorter because of the fact that COVID happened.
Yeah.
So they had to cut it short. It's essentially what it is. It's a bag of misfits. These are all characters from the comics, by the way. And even the villains are actually from the comics. But it's a bunch of misfits who live together. They all have superpowers, or metas, as they call them in the DC universe. All got their powers and or conditions through outside means. They weren't born that way, and it's reflective of each character. It's reflective of how they were before they became a meta. It's quite interesting. And the biggest thing about it is that it's revitalized Brendan Fraser's career, because he was a mess and then he got this part, and he's amazing in it, along with all the other actors. He plays Cliff Steele, which is the robot guy that you see in the promo material. And there's also Matt Bomer, who plays a negative man who essentially is radioactive, a closeted gay man, which was not in the comics. That was added for the show specifically. There's Rita, who I cannot remember the actress. April. Thank you. And she has stretchy abilities, but initially she can't control them. And then there's Jane, because that's what she's usually called. She has 64 different personalities, and each personality has a superpower. Especially in second season, it starts to delve into her relationship with each personality, or at least a few of them. They don't show all 64. And it gets even weirder in season 3, by the way. I can't really go any further to talk about it. But it's not your kid's superhero show, let's put it that way. It's they swear a lot. There are sex scenes in it. There's nudity in it. There are a lot of adult topics in it. But it's now become one of my absolute favorite shows of all time. It's that good, but it's not a Rick show.
No, I disagree. I think Rick would love that show.
We watched a little bit of Titans. My wife was watching Titans, and I was in the room when she was watching it. And there was a whole episode that took place in the Doom Patrol's mansion.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. And I kind of enjoyed Titans. Although, you know, I love the Teen Titans, the original, the first cartoon series. So wrapping my head around a gritty grown-up Titans, and once I don't want to spoil it, but once a certain character got their memory back, I liked it a lot better. Because the whole no memory thing bugs me. It's
well, that was only first season, luckily. So
yeah, but what I saw the Doom Patrol, I really enjoyed, and I just keep forgetting to watch it.
Okay, well, it's in third season now. It gets darker and darker each time, but I like the fact that they spend time to go to focus on each character. They bring in a new character in season 2 that, if I mentioned who she is, it would spoil. And then my absolute favorite character is Danny, who you don't meet until way later. Danny is from the comics. The best way to describe Danny is a street. Like, for real, he's a character who happens to be a street.
Danny the street, yeah.
Danny the street. Yeah. And
he's a road?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, he's the entire town.
He's the entire block. Yeah.
It's a town. But it's a town that happens to be a person, so to speak.
It's like he'll talk to you by the marquee on the movie will change and say, hey, how's it going? And that's Danny talking to you. You know,
Danny is genderqueer. And essentially Danny is a refuge for people who are different. Most of the residents are either they're punks or drag queens or something of that nature, but it's a refuge for people who are weird. And there's a couple other actors that pop in and out that you recognize from other franchises. Mark Sheppard shows up a few times. He's plays kind of like a discount Constantine. He's amazing. Some of the plots are just like, but for Doom Patrol, it seems to work. You just have to watch it. It's amazing.
Oh yeah.
Other thing I've caught up on was there's a show on Netflix called Never Have I Ever. Mindy Kaling is one of the executive producers of it. She does some of the writing for the scripts. There's only two seasons so far. It's essentially, since I work in an Indian magazine and I have a lot more context to it, but it's about a teenage girl. She's an Indian, specifically Hindi Indian. But she goes to a school where there's like no other Indians, and she's like a super nerd. She's really smart. It's basically dealing with her interactions with everybody else who's not Indian, along with her family and everything else. It's absolutely hilarious because it kind of reminds you of those like wacky 80s teen comedy films like John Hughes and all that. But at the same time, it's very fresh. And not everything is wrapped up in a happy, pretty little bow at the end of the season. Devi, who's the main character, and this is the gal who's playing Devi. This is her first ever role. And she's the lead, and she does an amazing job in it. She has issues. She makes mistakes. She is flawed. And she does some zingers in the two seasons that are out so far. And again, not everything's wrapped up in a happy little bow. But it's very funny. I actually do think, Rick, you would like it. if you're into that kind of thing, there's a couple of like Indian jokes you may not get. But for the most part, it's pretty friendly for everyone to understand what's going on. And I absolutely enjoyed it. I laughed, I've cried, I love it to death. There's only two seasons out so far. The last season came out this past July, and I absolutely love it. But I like silly 80s teen high school comedy things. I grew up with that stuff. So it's really cute, and there are some heartfelt moments in it as well. Especially in second season, where you actually see some growth of some of the characters. So there's that. So that's pretty much what I've been catching up on and watching.
Okay. All right. Scott, what about you?
I have been... Yes, Zena, I'm talking now. Hello. as we all know, I watched Squid Game recently. I started catching up on the Leprechaun movie series because I'm a glutton for punishment. I recently, and part of this is based on Sean's positive review of it. I'm making my way toward Halloween Kills by watching first the 2018 Halloween sequel, and I'll watch Halloween Kills coming up here pretty soon. The 2018, I liked it more than I thought I was going to like it. It didn't blow me away, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was well put together. Decently made film. One thing that I did watch recently, and I'm gonna have to put the cat off of my chest for this one, because she's gonna get in the way. Come on.
What's he gonna do?
So sorry. I watched a movie yesterday that I had not heard of before grabbing it. Excuse me. And I was really pleasantly surprised by it. A 2017 film, I believe it was. And let me know if anyone has heard of this before. Dave Builds a Maze.
I love that movie. Mm-mm.
John
has. I think John is lying. I think John is lying. He
you think John is lying?
Yeah, I think you haven't seen it.
Why would you think that? Why would I ever lie to impress you? No, I love that movie. I saw it on Hulu a couple of years ago.
Okay.
You want to quiz me?
I thought you were just trying to be funny.
No, it's a good movie. I really enjoy
it. That's something I would do.
Touche.
And Rick, you would like this movie.
I've never even heard of it.
It is... Scott. I don't... It is zany and endlessly creative. It was just as a stage technician, you would love the way how a low budget set is not a low budget set. It is a joyful exploration of imagination.
Mm-hmm. What's it called? Dave Builds a Maze?
Yes, Dave Builds a Maze. It's so good. And it's written well enough so that while these crazy things are happening to real people, they acknowledge that the craziness is happening, but they also give into it, which is the only way that that could work.
Right.
That sounds pretty good, actually.
It's really good. It is a very underrated film. Good picture. Mm-hmm.
To set up the barest of synopses, and just to get you started, Dave is an aspiring artist who is kind of spinning his wheels, not really sure what he wants to do, and this is basically what you pick up throughout the film, because it really jumps right into the meat of the story. This struggling artist finally strikes upon an idea of something to do, something to build. So he begins building we'll call it an art project out of cardboard. He's building it in the living room of his apartment. Immediately, and this is right at the beginning of the film, see opening credits and then cut to about 3 days later when his girlfriend returns home from a business trip and sees what is roughly a half dozen like cardboard refrigerator boxes all cobbled together with tape and other adhesives to make a rudimentary cardboard structure in the middle of the room. When she comes home, she can hear him calling out to her from inside because he has been lost inside of it for 3 days. Eventually, more people are brought to the scene. You get a bunch of people that go inside this little cardboard structure with a door that's maybe about 3 feet tall. And much like a TARDIS, it is bigger on the inside. It is a massive labyrinth made of nothing but cardboard, complete with booby traps, dead ends,
characters,
and all manner of wackiness.
Would this be somewhere on a par with like Being John Malkovich as far as the absurdist surrealism of it?
It is on par in the sense that it is surreal. It is not on par in that it is not dramatic. There are a few scenes It is absolutely much more of a, it's more like Alice in Wonderland than being John Malkovich.
Yeah. I'd put them in the same hemisphere as far as the like absurdity and the surrealness, I guess. I would say this movie has more whimsy.
Whimsical is the perfect word for this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the surrealism is, excuse me, it's at the core of this movie. It's not a, dare I say, gimmick used to travel through the plot like it is in Being John Malkovich. The whole thing is just very, very creative. It'll take you by surprise how charming that you find it.
It's really well acted. It's very well written. It's really, really good.
Yeah. A delightful little surprise of a film. I found myself laughing and chuckling all the way through. Now for a lot of this is going to be for John because I know he's seen it. Now, John, you recall that there are a lot of sets in this movie that are made for real out of cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
The production was able to get scrap cardboard from a nearby company that was, getting rid of it and recycling it. And they got a whole bunch of cardboard thinking this should be plenty to get us through production. No problem at all. 3 weeks later, they realized it was not enough cardboard. So they go back to that company and that company can't give cardboard anymore. So they have to go someplace else and they find another company that was willing to give them some of their disused cardboard. So now they have stacks and stacks of actual scrap disused cardboard that they're using to make the sets. But the studio space that they had only allowed them enough room to make two of the set rooms at one time. So they build one room out of nothing but cardboard, and they film that scene. While they're filming a scene in that room, the production team is building the next room while they're filming. Finish filming in that room, go to room number two, tear down room number one and build room number three in its place.
Wow.
Finish filming in room number two, go to room number three, tear down room number two and build room number four. And that's how they went through the entire production, is just tear down a set and build a new one while they're filming in the other set. And the production never paid a single dollar for any of the cardboard that they used in the film.
Hey.
Clever production. I can't imagine what the budget was, but the box office.
It is the best student film you'll ever see. It's what this movie is like.
It won a ton of awards, it looks like.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I remember, the box office for this movie was $34,000.
Oh.
I don't know what the budget was, but its box office was $34,000. But don't let that fool you. This movie is it's a delight to watch. You'll be glad that you watched it. It's a nice bright it's a bright chicken salad on a summer day.
All right, Virginia, what about you?
Well, as we all know, I watch things about 30 years too late.
Not too late, just later.
First of all, can I complain for a hot second about how the 1990s are 30 years ago? That's just ridiculous. But also, and Rick, I think you'll like this one. I have been watching Babylon 5 for the first time.
Nice.
Blunt choice.
But I've only gone through season one, so don't say anything past season one. But it's very interesting. And what the most interesting part was, I had been doing my regular rewatch of TNG and went right into DS9 right after that. And so I'm watching them both kind of parallel. It's like,
That's not inappropriate, actually.
It seems very similar.
But well, they aired at the same time. There's just a few months in between each other.
Oh, okay.
In fact, there are numerous conflicting theories as to which series pilfered the most from which. Because there was an exchange of concepts and ideas between the two production staffs. But, you know, depending on who you talk to, Ira Steven Behr and Rick Berman ripped off Babylon 5, or Michael J. Straczynski ripped off Star Trek DS9. There was some bad blood between the two for quite a while.
Well, I like them both. I've seen DS9 several times, of course. But yeah, I know there's like some cast changes coming in season 2. So I'm like kind of, I don't know about that, but I'm definitely going to watch more of it and see what happens.
I think there's only
every change serves the story.
Yeah. One thing Straczynski was really good about was thinking on his feet when Michael O'Hare left. Was not expected. He wasn't expecting Michael O'Hare to leave. He pivoted really well, and then, you know, brought in Bruce Boxleitner, and it doesn't affect the flow of the show at all.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. You know, when I was watching it, and it doesn't. It's like Doctor Who. We didn't expect him to leave. We made it part of the story, and now it is integral to the story.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that I've been watching, which Rick, you should not watch, is Midnight Mass, which was the most bizarre show.
Oh. That is a weird show
that I have seen in a while.
Yeah.
It was just very strange, but like,
well, I
definitely
know.
Could not sit there and like binge the whole thing. It's like, okay, I've gotten enough murder and mayhem for one evening.
Yeah, I couldn't finish it either.
I don't know if I'd say Rick shouldn't watch it because Rick likes vampire stuff.
Yeah,
I like vampires.
Yeah, it's basically a vampire. They never say the word vampire, I don't think, but they're vampires.
Pretty much, yeah. So. Now you guys get to see my cat.
All right. John, what about you? What you been watching?
I have been also on HBO Max catching up on the DC stuff. So Titans, you know, I'm not binging. I wouldn't say I'm binging it. Like every now and then I'll watch the next episode. I think I don't even know if we made it all the way through season one. What does season one end?
Season one ends.
Let me just say what we are. It's probably better.
Okay.
They've escaped from they broke the mother out of the asylum, and I think we're one or two episodes past that. I think the next one we see, the next episode in the queue is the origin of Hawk and Dove.
You're still in season one.
Yeah, you're in season one. You're almost done with season one.
Yeah, I think I'm still in season one. So it's okay. There are parts that I like about it, there's parts that I don't like about it. Basically it's a more mature CW show and all that that implies, so it's fine. Above that is Doom Patrol, which Jen has already discussed. I'm in season 2 of that. I'm probably three or four episodes into season 2.
Okay.
Part of the reason I'm not binging them straight is because that's one of the shows, or those two of the shows that my wife and I watch together. So I can't watch them at the pace that I would watch them. And I absolutely think Rick would love that show.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just, it's darker and.
But it's also silly.
Yeah. It's got a lot of silly in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's the weighty, just, you know, quagmire of crap cloud the unrelenting crap cloud that, yeah. that Rick doesn't it, like. It's not that he can't watch something sad, but as long as it's got to be balanced. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Doom Patrol is very balanced.
It can get fairly heavy. Doom mm-hmm. Patrol can be a fairly heavy show, but it's so gonzo that you don't always yeah. notice how heavy it gets.
Yeah. It spends so much time being silly, much like the Maze movie. There's so much of it that's silly mm-hmm. that when there is something that is sincere, it hits so much harder. When a character who just cracks jokes all the time, funny jokes all the time, when they really break down, it really means something. And on the DC hierarchy of new shows that I'm watching on HBO Max, at the top of that list is Young Justice.
Okay.
Rick, watch Young Justice. It's the... I know you're a fan of the older Teen Titans. It had the first season has very much that vibe. Mm-hmm. Not as silly, but you know, still kind of silly. You know, each season, as the characters grow, as the characters mature, the show gets more mature. So, like by the time they're in season, this is season four now. Season four just started. So,
is this live action or animated?
It is animated.
Okay.
It's animated, but it's so
very well animated.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well animated and it's very smart. Like, you know, not to blaspheme, but I know that one of the things you love about Star Trek is the way most people love about Star Trek is the way that it addresses social issues in a fantastic setting. Young Justice does this as well as any show that I've ever seen.
Oh,
like it's so good. It's so good. I think each season, probably 20 something episodes, 16 to 20 episodes. And season four just started, like I said, I think they're probably on episode four and they're coming out weekly. So yeah, you know, take some time, binge the first several seasons, you know, this is a show that I started off watching with the kids. I can stay up later. So I watched ahead. And B, they get like real. Like some of the themes, the first season so much, the first season is fine. The second season is slightly more mature. The third season, I mean, it's really like, okay, this is fine for a 10-year-old, maybe 12, 13, maybe 15, 16 on this. So, you know.
Okay, all three of us with cats. No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
All right, so...
Artemis.
Let's talk about our top five.
Artemis, before we get to pets, Artemis, that is a character on Young Justice.
Indeed.
Oh. It is.
It's also a character in Ready Player One.
Yeah, but we're not talking about that. We were talking about Young Justice, and that's why our sister. And
Scott is salty tonight.
All right.
To jump back to what John was saying about Titans, just real quick, I want to say, and this is for John to know moving forward, Titans is one of the rare shows, especially a superhero show, that's getting better as the seasons go on.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
I get that sense. I don't feel like I'm wasting my time with it, but it's also, it's not compelling me to binge it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, season three, they've really upped the writing as far as the plot. I absolutely adore season three, not as much as Doom Patrol, but they did, the writing is much more apparently better in season three for Titans. Yeah,
they're definitely just letting themselves go. Titans is absolutely what the Arrowverse wishes it could be if they just if they took them off all the leashes. If you just let them have absolutely free reign, they would want to make a show like this.
Yeah.
All right. I also binged the complete Pirates of the Caribbean series.
Oh my gosh.
So good. So good.
What?
Oh,
no, the first three are great.
Pirates movies. Yeah, the Pirates movies.
First three are great. Four, meh. Five, decent.
Yeah, they're good movies. Entertaining.
I didn't mean to be mean, Sean. Sorry.
So if you could have any animal, creature, or life form from a movie or TV show and keep them as a pet, what would be your top five picks? John, since this was your idea, what would be your five?
You want all five together?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let me find it. Okay. Number five, I actually got a tie between the Flurkin of the MCU. All of you petting cats so carelessly, with no concern for your own safety.
You'll Targ, put your eye out.
Klingon Targ. Just because I think they'd be interesting. I think they make good guard animals. Number four, the goose who laid the golden eggs, for obvious reasons. Number three, call back to Neverending Story, Luck Dragon. Flies, good
What's
luck.
What's his name? What's his name?
No, I don't need that particular Luck Dragon, just a Luck Dragon. But the downside is that he's huge. I presume they're all huge. And, you know, that would be tough to explain. Number two, Pokemon, Ditto. Ditto is the Pokemon, looks like a blob, but can basically take the form of any Pokemon and assume their powers, which is awesome. Any Pokemon. And these seems really nice. Number one choice, any pet, fictional, sci-fi, or magical, I would choose the dog from the Dog's Purpose movies. I don't know if you've seen these films, but basically...
I saw the first one.
Basically, the trailer made me weep uncontrollably. I couldn't cope with what you mean.
So here's the deal. The premise is basically a dog's purpose is to, you know, is to help its human, you know, be happy, fulfilled, whatever. And this dog, the spirit of this dog is reincarnated. So if you get you find this dog, this puppy, you form a life bond with this puppy. And, you know, you grow up, the dog grows up, it gets to be an older dog. As happens, the dog passes away. That dog, that spirit, is reborn in another puppy who remembers you. And so that you get a new dog that is still that same dog. And like this happens like through generations. Like there's like the kids have the same dog as the parents had when they were kids. It's an eternal dog.
I didn't know there was more than one movie. I thought there was just the one.
I think there's two, but this happens in one movie.
Yeah, yeah, like, oh yeah, yeah.
The first movie, you know, it's him when he was a boy, and then it's like his grandkid, or at least his. But it takes him like the whole movie to figure out that it's the same dog, but it's the same dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I could pick a pet, that would be my pet. That would be my family pet. For as long as he or she wants to stay with us.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my five.
All right. Virginia, what about you? What's your five?
Well, I actually have four.
Okay.
And when I look at this list, I'm like, half of these are all cute and cuddly, and half of these are like, I want to destroy my enemies. So I'll start with Snoopy, because he just does a bunch of stuff and he would be a really cool dog to have. Sorry, Pippet, cover your ears. And then I debated on Porg versus Tribble, and I don't think Porgs are quite as reproductively healthy as Tribbles, so I went with Porg instead.
And the Porgs are probably delicious.
Probably.
Tribbles are delicious too. They're nothing but meat. They're like a scallop.
Like a scallop.
Yeah. And they're pregnant with flavor.
One of the dragons, I don't care which, from Game of Thrones, so I can just fly around and like destroy ships, towers, whatever.
I want the zombie dragon that breathes the blue fire.
Oh God, no.
And then my last one, I had to look up what they were called because I wasn't sure, but the Seti eels from Wrath of Khan.
Oh God.
Where they like they make them very susceptible to persuasion. I'm going to have my own army of people with my dragon holding my sword with Snoopy
as
Red Baron behind me.
Seti eel is what they're colloquially called. They're never given a name in the movie.
But
pets, not again, quite domesticated.
For the Star Trek, you know, layman.
Oh, those who don't know, yes.
Yes, I'm the one who doesn't know.
All right.
That's all.
Listen.
Jim, what about you?
Oh, I'm still working on my list.
Okay.
Yeah, come back to me.
All right. Well, I'll do my list. So hold on a second. Sorry. Okay. So number five would be Slimer from the real Ghostbusters.
He's sentient. He's kind of. Well, I guess he is.
You said creature or life form.
I did.
And I think he would be cool to hang out with, and we could get into mischief together.
You definitely would.
Garfield, because he's chill, he's low maintenance. You just have to give him a lasagna every day, and he's cool. I would want a Mogwai. Because I know the rules.
For trouble, don't you?
I can follow the rules. I know the rules. I would want a house elf from Harry Potter. But I don't want a slave, so I would give him clothes. And we would just hang out.
Okay.
I wouldn't expect him to wait on me hand and foot. And I also want Falcor from the Neverending Story, because gotta have a luck dragon.
I go wrong with a luck dragon. But I considered Mogwai. How old do you think is, like, do you think Gizmo's like immortal, or do you think he's like, do they ever indicate how long they live? Because I got the sense that like he's as old as the old man.
I don't know,
but. Like, has that ever?
They never say. So he, and in Gremlins too, he's the same age as he was in the first one. So
yeah, there's no telling. All right.
Yeah. All right. Rick, what about you?
Well, to be perfectly frank, I thought you were kidding. So I just came up with my list off the top of my head.
I'm getting that a lot tonight for some reason.
Well, I thought that did we mention this before?
No.
Okay, because you threw it out there, and then Sean was like, yeah, but really, we're doing this. And I was like, oh, okay, that was a joke.
So here's the telepathic conversation that Sean and I had, to let you guys know. And Sean, to let you know. anytime Sean says, yeah, we're just going to talk about whatever, that is my invitation to come up with a topic. Anytime Sean is like, yeah, we don't really have a topic, we're just going to talk. That is, it's like open mic night. So any kind of little idea of something, it's like, okay, we'll give you 15 minutes at the close of the show. we'll find a spot for you sometime in the, you know, to get up on stage. So yes, and.
Okay. Normally I would have like done some digging through the internet to jog my memory of stuff, but I think I've got a semi-decent list here. Number five is Bandit from Johnny Quest. Okay. Although yeah. I kind of already live with the little yappy bastard already. if you're not familiar, Bandit was a little bulldog. He had a, you know, like kind of a raccoon mask markings around his eyes. So that's why they called him Bandit. And he just barked at everything. It was utterly useless. Smart. Yeah, he was smart. Yeah. a Salot, which is a Vulcan pet. They're a giant furry mammal with 6-inch fangs. And they're rather cuddly and ferocious, which Virginia fits into your your criteria there. Jonesy from the Nostromo, the cat from Alien and Aliens, because Jonesy is the baddest ass cat ever. There's a great t-shirt design / meme going around Facebook that just shows Jonesy walking through the halls of the Nostromo carrying the baby alien in its mouth and it's dead. And it's like, if Jonesy was in charge of the movie. Oh. number three, number two. Yeah, I remember which direction I'm going in. Whatever kind of dragon Toothless is, he's a knight something or other.
He's a Night Fury.
Night Fury. They're adorable and very cool. And then my number one would be, I have no idea if they have a name or not, the Na'vi dragon flying dinosaur things that they had in
they do have a name, but I can't pronounce it. I've ridden one.
Avatar.
Though. Yeah.
You've ridden one?
I've ridden one at Disney World. Yeah, it was amazing.
It was nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, they have a ride at Disney World where you can ride one, and it's like a 3D experience, and it actually feels like you're riding on the back of this beast. You can actually feel it, like you're sitting on the saddle. You can feel the beast breathing between your knees, like you can feel its breath and everything. It's an amazing ride.
You fly over the water. You can feel the spray of the water. You can smell seawater. It's really, really cool.
And it goes down into a cave, and you can smell the cave and everything. Yeah.
Disney's good at that stuff. You know, you'll have to sell one of your children to afford to go there, but it'll be worth the money.
I'm kicking myself that I didn't think of Toothless. Well done, sir. Well done.
All right. Thank you. Scott, what about you?
I've struggled with a justification for having a Tribble on my list, but then I remembered that what's his name, Lorca on Star Trek Discovery had a Tribble in his office and only ever had one Tribble in his office.
It was neutered.
That's true.
It is. Either way. It is possible to neuter a Tribble.
Or he just ate them when they came out.
You just have to expose them right to high doses
of
gamma radiation.
Then he must have been very hungry.
Yeah.
He's eaten a lot of Tribbles. So,
and fortune cookies.
So a fixed Tribble would be one. Sticking with...
such a good name for a band. Fixed Tribble.
Sticking with Game of Thrones, I do like the idea not of having a dragon, because that's a little bit too severe, but a direwolf wouldn't be a bad idea.
That's a good one.
I also like the idea of having a Pegasus, because I can ride a horse and I can fly a horse whenever I want. Now, Pegasus has shown up in many a TV and film, so just kind of, you know, pick which one you want. Initially, I was thinking the animated Hercules film from Disney, but, you know, whatever Pegasus really you want, just go for it.
That Pegasus is kind of a diva, though.
A bit of a diva, and, you know, sometimes a bit, you know, he's got the brain of a bird. He's
so was Hercules.
He's a little dim sometimes, so maybe a smarter Pegasus than that. Now, that Pegasus would give me some battle superiority on, you know, on land and in the air. A direwolf definitely helps with your ground battle, but you can't always feel secure in knowing that those animals are going to keep you alive. You might end up, you know, in danger for your life, seriously.
So it's a nice idea to have a phoenix around to help get you out of a certain situation. So even though I haven't even seen all the films in the series, and the ones that I have seen, I've only seen once. And I've only read the books once, but it from Harry Potter, Dumbledore had himself a phoenix that was a once in a great while special bonus effect. And that was Fox. So I'll take Fox and have myself a phoenix pet. And I was trying to figure out which cat from all of film and television I wanted, but how can you choose a cat?
I just assumed it'd be Grudge.
Yeah,
Grudge. I figured if you're getting a cat, it'd be Grudge. Since your cat looks a lot like Grudge.
mine's Garfield. So
can I change one of mine? Because Scott, nope, you just gave me an inspiration.
I understand that Grudge is a queen, but I don't understand what the big deal is about Grudge. I like my Xena. And Xena had a TV show, so it's close enough. I'm going to keep my cat. I'm going to keep my Xena. Rick, what's your idea?
I want to trade out Bandit for Sleipnir, which is Odin's nine-legged horse.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Okay. I have my list now.
Can I trade out the Mogwai for Alligator Loki?
Alligator Loki will definitely kill you.
That was not on my list, but I thought about it.
He's a small alligator. Okay.
There's no such thing.
Go ahead. He's a magical alligator imbued with the heart of Loki. Will definitely 1000%. He's definitely kill you.
Okay. Clearly no one's pet.
That we know of. But anyway.
Ooh, can I pick Throg then?
Yeah.
Awesome. God. Okay.
Get him out of that jar.
Yeah. Easy.
Go ahead,
Jim. All right. Okay. Number five. I have a dog and a cat on my list, by the way. Number five is Pongo from Once Upon a Time. Cute little Dalmatian. He's adorable. Number four, the Buckbeak, the hippogriff from Prisoner of Azkaban.
Good choice.
Yep. Number three, Wilbur from Charlotte's Web. Because he can talk and he can influence a spider.
And that's some big.
And he's delicious in a pinch.
Oh, he was radiant too. Number two, Shadowfax from the Lord of the Rings.
I was wondering which one of you was going to pick Shadowfax.
And number one is a character specifically from the D&D mythos, a Tressum, which is a cat with wings that can talk and tends to play practical jokes on people. Like, it's more of a cat than a regular cat. So there you go.
Can I trade Garfield for Pooh Bear?
Not a pet.
Why isn't he? He could be a pet.
I considered making my cat choice Battle Cat from He-Man, but I realized that I already had a Pegasus, which was a rideable animal, and a dire wolf can sometimes be ridden in a pinch. So I didn't necessarily need another animal to ride on.
Well, if you don't have the sword, if you don't have the sword of power, you're just stuck with Cringer.
Touche.
I thought about Goliath from Davy and Goliath, Samson and Goliath. No, Davy.
No, Davy and Goliath
was a different thing. No, Samson and Goliath was a Hanna-Barbera cartoon where Samson and his dog, Samson was just a kid and he rode around on a scooter with a dog, but he had these wristbands, and when shit went down he would clack the wristbands together and turn into Mighty Samson, and then he'd smack them together like this and the dog would turn into a big ass lion. Yeah. And then they'd throw cars and shit.
I considered 3030 from Brave Star, the
mechanical horse. Yeah
that turns into a sidekick. Weapons master. I didn't think about it, but everybody else is getting these, you know, creatures of like mass destruction.
I didn't.
So I'm gonna pick my alternate would be the psychic war elephant from Adventure Time. I don't know if any of you know that, but it's
yeah.
Oh, what about an Oliphant from Lord of the Rings?
Yeah. Oh, those big
8-story yeah. high elephant.
I gotta feed that thing, man.
Yeah.
Clean up after it.
Clean up after it. Like, yeah.
That's one big pile of shit.
We are approaching the end of the show. If you want to hear more, come over to patreon.com/infinitepotato. That's where you find extra content from our network, including access to early access to episodes, special monthly episodes, and you can help us out for only $3 a month, or you can join at the $5 or $10 level and become a producer like Bullet Bingall, Tom Corcoran, Brandon Ushio, Dale Goodall, and Jeff Hughes.
And boy, do those guys produce.
They do. They're very productive. Jen, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Virginia, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
John, you want to let everybody know where they can find you?
Sure. I'm on various shows on the Infinite Potato Alliance, like many of the other people here. My show is Captain Game Show, trivia, wordplay, Zaniness incarnate. Is it incarnate if it's over the pod? Sure, let's say it is.
All right, Rick, thank you for being here. How can we find you?
You can find me in the local cemetery trying to make zombie gerbils.
Gross.
Thank you.
Okay.
Wait, how?
Don't you have to bite them?
Well, you have to bury it first and then it comes back, but it ain't right, right? Isn't that how it goes?
That's
it's only that one cemetery.
Sometimes. It's just that one cemetery. You gotta
now you tell me.
Change it's the a pet cemetery.
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to let me back.
Dead is better. Okay.
Sometimes dead is better.
Scott, where can we find
the worst pets, Rick?
You can find me on this particular show as well as oftentimes on that Star Trek podcast, occasionally on Captain Game Show. And coming soon on my very own new show, I Watch That for a Dollar, where I sit down with a guest and I discuss a film that I purchased on Blu-ray or DVD at my local dollar store. I have literally dozens of discs stacked up waiting for shows. There are so many. There are so many. But if you get tired of waiting for that show to come out, then you can see some of my visual work by visiting my website at www.planetrisecreative.com or find me on Twitter at Planet Rise to see some of my graphic artwork, including posters, social media avatars, banners, logos, book covers, and so on. If anyone's interested, I am accepting commissions most of the time.
All right. And if you want to know where to find us and stay tuned for a moment, and we'll let you know momentarily. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time on Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, when you might hear John say,
you know, I'm pretty sure the first person Darth Vader ever force choked was just some stormtrooper like on the elevator on Mustafar, just trying to make small talk. Like the elevator ride was long, and like he kind of leaned over, he's like, "Hot enough for you?" That was it.
I did not see it go in there.
Me either.
Thank you for joining us. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Fredo's gonna leave without giving you a goodbye kiss.
Help the show grow by leaving us a 5-star rating and a review, or support the show by visiting us at patreon.com/infinitepotato.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
Be sure to join us again soon on Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, brought to you by InfinitePotato.com.
Goodbye.
This concludes our broadcast day.